Today is the third day of confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, the first black woman in history nominated, potentially the first to be confirmed, to the U.S. Supreme Court. Members of the Senate Judiciary Committee have brought up a wide variety of topics, including the historic nature of Judge Jackson's nomination, her take on the First Amendment, and hot-button conservative talking points, including critical race theory and gender. We're talking about the Supreme Court confirmation hearings of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been watching or listening to the hearings? What has stood out to you? What do you want from a Supreme Court nominee? What do you want to hear from senators in these confirmation hearings? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Susan Liebel is professor of political science at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. Susan, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here, Rob.
What has stood out to you over the 2 days so far?
Wow. The tone has just been like a ping pong match in which it moves from sort of exceedingly hostile, interrupting, back to a kind of a, pitch the ball firmly over the plate and try to get the nominee to explain some of what might not have been explained or misunderstood during the more combative questioning. That stood out to me. And I guess, though, the manner in which she has been interrupted yet remained composed, I think that those two things for the moment are something that stood out to me.
Judge Jackson talked about her views on judicial transparency, her belief that regular people should be able to understand the courts, referencing her background as a public defender earlier in her career.
What I decided as a trial judge was that I was going to make sure that everyone who was in my courtroom, and especially the defendant, understood all of the procedures that we were going through, all of the steps. I spoke directly to them. I asked them, do you understand what's happening?
Can you talk a little bit about what Judge Jackson was saying there and her background as a public defender, which is fairly unique these days on a U.S. Supreme Court?
Oh, it's quite unique. The last one that we know of was Thurgood Marshall. So it's been quite a while. I think that she is trying very hard to take these questions that are sometimes very technical and case specific and translate them into an understanding of her wider approach to the law, which tends to focus on due process and how the adversarial system, how making an argument that you might not agree with is part of what makes the American system unique and, in her eyes, admirable. So I think that she's walking a fine line. On the one hand, she's trying to answer very specific questions. At the same time, she's trying to be understood by the American public.
There's a couple different ways of looking at a Supreme Court justice. I think in the public, commonly, and in the media, we often think liberal or conservative on our current American scale. But there are issues of judicial philosophy that different lawyers, different judges may hold. What are you seeing from Judge Jackson when it comes to those two scales of judgment?
Well, first of all, I think we found out that she really doesn't like the term judicial philosophy, and she prefers methodology. I think what we've learned about her in these hearings is actually she's a very moderate judge. Critical race theory has come up a lot, but she's actually the opposite of critical race theory. And from the left, there would be a lot to criticize in the approach that she takes. She's very comfortable with elements of originalism and history. Again, I think that may have been a bit of a surprise to people who were listening to the hearings. And also she rejected acceptance of looking at international law, which is something that Justice Kennedy from the right and Justice Breyer from the left did. I mean, she seemed to almost be supporting originalism yesterday.
And remind us what originalism is.
Originalism purports to create a neutral stance. So it says that the Constitution was written by two sets of framers, you know, at the time of the founding in the 18th century, and then the refounding of the nation after the Civil War. And that what we should do is look back to the original understanding of those framers and the public that they were speaking to. And that is often put forward as a neutral way of understanding the law, as opposed to a living constitution, which means that we interpret the words as we would today.
We are looking at the Supreme Court nomination hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Susan Liebel is with us, professor of political science at St. Joseph University in Philadelphia. You could join in with your thoughts on what you've seen and heard so far, your questions about the process, about the Supreme Court itself. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Now, if, as I mentioned earlier, if she's confirmed, Judge Jackson would be the first Black woman in history on the U.S. Supreme Court. She talked a little bit about the historic nature of her nomination.
I stand on the shoulders of so many who have come before me, including Judge Constance Baker Motley, who was the first African-American woman to be appointed to the federal bench and with whom I share a birthday. And like Judge Motley, I have dedicated my career to ensuring that the words engraved on the front of the Supreme Court building, equal justice under law, are a reality and not just an ideal.
Susan, how are senators from both parties treating the historic nature of the nomination?
Well, it's been radically different. She's receiving a lot of kudos from the Democratic members of the committee, a lot of space to explain her views, some specific questions about particular pet peeves of the Democratic senators. But she's been challenged very stridently by Senators Cruz, by Senator Hawley, by Senator Graham, and others in ways that we've come to expect sometimes in these hearings, but really pushed to the edge of the kind of combativeness.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Randy is with us in Preston, Minnesota. Randy, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just listening to Josh Hawley's current round of questioning, and it seems to me his goal is to get the nominee to strike out and tell him what a jerk he is, to try and undermine, you know, and then that'll be the lead of all the papers and all the news, that, oh, she flipped out and she told Josh Hawley he was a jerk. I would have used more colorful language. But, yeah, he didn't really want to answer. He just keeps going the same hot button. It's all about sentencing of people convicted of pornography. But I just read a book by a judge, Jeb Radoff, I think was his name, and it's Why the Innocent Plead Guilty and the Guilty and the Rich Go Free. And what they do to people is the prosecutors throw a million charges, and then they say, we'll cut you a deal. If you plead guilty to the one thing and you'll only get this, they make these deals. And so people say, well, if I don't plead guilty and I go to court, I go to a trial and I lose, I could go for 20 years.
I gotcha. Randy, to Randy's point about, for example, Senator Hawley's question, that idea of a kind of a trying to get theater, trying to get a moment in there. Even Republican Senator Ben Sasse referred to the I'll clean up his language, but basically a theatrical nature of some of the questioning. What do you think about what Randy had to say, Susan?
Yeah, he said mugging for the cameras. I think Randy is right about the baiting. So the hope is to disturb her composure. And as you see, she carefully keeps her hands folded. She doesn't move her body very much. She occasionally furrows her brow, but very little. And I guess I would go a little bit, and I agree with you as well, that this is, as Senator Sasse said, mugging for the cameras. But I think it's actually more. I think what we are also seeing is a kind of a racial dog whistle politics in which what the senators are trying to suggest is that Black Americans are criminals, that Black lawyers are supportive of criminal behavior, so that somehow she is somebody who is not tough enough. But I don't think it's simply about toughness. I think that there's something else going on there in terms of a bias, a suggestion, for example, that neutrality, that she lacks neutrality. And I think there she's being asked to prove that she's not biased because of her gender and her race.
Randy, thanks for that call. Go to Fawn next in Madison. Fawn, hello.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to comment on Judge Brown Jackson's utter composure. In the parts of the hearings that I had witnessed, she just maintained such equanimity, like such a sanguinity, just calm composure. It's such grace under pressure that is just makes me admire her to the hilt. And I wish that she would make a model Supreme Court justice, in my opinion. In fact, I wish she were on our state Supreme Court for the same reason. But she, her behavior and her composure, her grace, her intelligence, and her measured responses were nothing short of exemplary. I wish the same could be said for some of those senators.
Fawn, thanks for the call. Susan, you were just talking about some of that equanimity. Do you want to expand on what Fawn had to say?
No, I think Fawn is right, and there's been a lot of commentary, especially from professional Black women, talking about mansplaining and patronizing, and that this is something that you are or watching her endure. Even the senators who are supporting her are often patronizing her. She's being told, like, you're a role model. She is, in a sense, the suggestion is she must prove that she is an exemplary American because of both her race and her gender. And I agree with Fawn that what we see is somebody who's being patronized, but is enduring being condescended to, interrupted, referred to as her and she. And that's really important because often it is the case that honorifics are denied Black professionals and women professionals. And we see that intersection here as she's called her and she instead of judge.
Fawn, thanks for the call. We're talking to Susan Liebel, professor and chair of political science at St. Joseph University, talking to us about Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation hearings ongoing this week. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. What has stood out to you if you've been watching, listening to, and or reading up on this process, on the judge and her nomination for this seat on the U.S. Supreme Court, your questions about Judge Jackson's credentials, background, where she might fit into the future of a Supreme Court if confirmed, 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with St. Joseph's University political science professor and chair Susan Liebel about the Supreme Court confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your reactions. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Sarah joins us next in Libertyville, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Rob. You know, can I just comment super quick on what you were just talking about her composure? And because she is being so nice, and I realize that, like, she feels like she has to be that nice, but they're being so mean to her. And she's like, yes, yes, yes. She's, like, so nice. And I wish she could just, like, be a little more, like, not so nice. But and compare that to Brett Kavanaugh, who was just frothing at the mouth. He was so angry. But, okay, so my question is, do they really have a goal? Do you think they really have a goal, the Republicans, of thinking they can get enough votes to defeat her? Or are they just trying to discredit her for, like, the future court decisions that she'll make? Or are they just trying to look good for their voters?
Sarah, thanks for the call. Interesting question. Is the goal to derail the nomination? Is it to score political points, maybe in an election, midterm election year? What do you think, Susan?
It's a great question, Sarah, and there's been amazing work in political science done on anger and who's allowed to be angry. And she's not allowed to be angry. She has to remain that composed or she will be criticized as either being shrill as a woman or being an angry Black woman. All of these stereotypes will be applied to her. I think her goal is to get herself confirmed. And the way the numbers work is that the Democrats have enough, if they can hold Manchin and Sinema in this vote, for Vice President Harris to then break the tie. They don't need any Republican votes. They're hoping to have some. And I think that they hoped that the three people who had voted for her the last time she was appointed federal judge, which was Lisa Mikulski and actually Senator Graham from South Carolina and Susan Collins from Maine, but it's not looking like the senator from South Carolina will be voting in her favor. He seems very, very hostile. But they don't need those votes. She hopes for them, but she doesn't need them.
Sarah, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us now in Elkhorn. Tim, hi.
Yes, sir. The line of questioning now any different than the line of questioning that the previous Supreme Court candidates have had?
Tim, thanks for the call. His line broke up a little there. Tim saying, is this really that much different than past confirmation processes? These can be pretty heated.
So look, most of our history, it was simply advise and consent. There weren't long hearings. There was a voice vote. It was extremely rare for the Senate to reject the president's pick. It occasionally was about competence. President Nixon nominated two judges that did not get good ratings from the American Bar Association. And he famously said, there's a lot of mediocre people, so why don't we have some mediocre judges? And then had to nominate somebody else. Since the Bork hearings in 1987, in which Reagan was overturned, there has been some rancor. Although after Bork, we really saw this settle down. And most of the justices had been unanimously or close to unanimously, put on the bench, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg and people who we might think of as more controversial. So I think what we're seeing is right now is a relitigating of past rancor. Rancor from the Republicans over the Kavanaugh hearings, rancor from the Democrats in the Republicans not holding a hearing on Merrick Garland. And I think we're seeing a reflection of where our Senate's politics stand right now. There is not a lot of cooperation. And so the way I would place this, Tim, is to say it is extraordinary. And we very recently had this departure, and we should think about our entire Democratic history, I think, when we judge the kind of behavior that we're seeing in the last couple of days.
Talking to Tim and Elkhorn, thanks for calling in. We're talking to Susan Liebel, professor at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, political scientist there, looking at the ongoing confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. Susan, what is it about these Supreme Court confirmation that's gotten so divisive? Is it just, you were touching on this a little bit, the Senate in general getting more partisan? Is there something about a higher stakes at the U.S. Supreme Court? What's going on?
It's funny, there is no stakes actually in this confirmation. I mean, it's a 6-3 conservative majority. Even if Chief Justice Roberts occasionally votes with the liberals, that is still not enough to be a majority. So this is the most solidly conservative court that we've seen in modern history. So there isn't anything at stake. And I agree with what I think you said earlier, or one of the callers, that some of this is playing out the midterms, the 2020 vote for the presidency. I think we're seeing Republicans, for example, Cruz and Sasse, position themselves in different ways. What should a Republican look like? So I think it's extremely complicated. And look, it's happened before. A couple of the justices have mentioned Hugo Black, who was appointed in the late 30s by FDR. But there was a problem with his nomination. It was rumored that he was in the Ku Klux Klan. And because we didn't have the internet and all the documentation that we have, it wasn't confirmed until after he was confirmed that, in fact, he had been a member. Now, he went on to be a justice who did much for civil rights. But, the kind of information wasn't available. And occasionally we did see very, very serious challenges to justices who were imagined to not be able to fulfill their duty on the bench.
What are you watching for as this goes forward now? The Judiciary Committee will finish up. What are you watching for in the rest of the process?
I'm watching to see just how far Cruz and others are willing to go on race baiting and repeating the child pornography material. I personally found it strange to hear them saying it over and over and over again, as they really seem to have established their point already. So they really seem to try to be rehearsing something. I don't think we're going to learn much more new about what anyone on the committee thinks. And I think it's just going to be watching the judge remain calm.
That child pornography angle, they have mentioned her sentences given to people who viewed child pornography. She points out within congressionally set guidelines, people have done stats. Her charges or her sentences are within the norm, as I understand it. So why this particular line of attack just in our last minute or so?
I think this is just trying out what issues can possibly make people uncomfortable and stop any Republican who was thinking about crossing party lines and being unified behind the first Black woman and a highly qualified person. I think the last thing I'd say is I don't actually think she's unusual. She's has the same education and very, very similar corporate law background, et cetera, than almost everybody who is on the Supreme Court. And she's had very, very similar jobs as a judge. So in some ways, she was a very moderate, conservative candidate. And it's interesting to watch her being made into a radical, which she absolutely is not.
Susan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome. It was terrific.
Susan Liebel is professor and chair of political science at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. She talked to us today about the ongoing confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. Keep following the news at WPR.org. We'll have reporting there from our colleagues at NPR.